people should go find someone just to talk to, even if it's just once or twice a year. Like, it's not like you're my mental health coach and we talk every single week. It does make a difference. Like, when you have to say it out loud, the things that you're working on or the things you want to change, or getting feedback maybe from somebody that doesn't know your game saying, hey, have you tried this? Have you looked at this? Because it's way different when you talk to somebody who knows about that stuff than when you talk to your buddies, right? Like, take the mental side seriously. Like, talk to somebody, read a book, do Decade. Do something to challenge the mental side of your golf game.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Jordan, thanks so much for being a guest on Wicked Smart Golf, man. Appreciate you being here.
First time as the person, I don't want to say being interviewed, but our first time chatting since our epic match as well.
I was going to give you props on the match, but you already had to bring it up. So for context, as I mentioned in the intro, not only are you a solid golfer, you run a great podcast, you had me on your show, and we got to finally tee it up together after working together with some mental golf stuff, and you beat me. So, you know, let's go through that, because, you know, before we get into it, or actually let's get into your golf background first and then that match, because it was a good match. I was thoroughly impressed by both our play. It was a fun day at Whirlwind. But, you know, you're all things golf. You've been playing, you want to get better. I love working with you. I love playing with you. Where did all this love of the game start?
That's actually a really good question. I feel like I caught the bug probably right after college. I didn't really play at all in, like, growing up. I think I had picked up a set of clubs and played a little bit. And then in high school, you know, I had the, you know, dad's old set or whatever. But it was really after college. I just fell in love with it. So that would have been like 2014, 2015. And ever since then, like, I just became addicted. I kind of had this addictive personality, and I wasn't playing any other sports, you know, like, I was always kind of one of those kids that, like, I was never really good at anything, but I was always solid at everything. Like, I could show up at open gym and I'll be like the fourth guy on your team and play really good defense and make a three. And then, like, I found golf, and just how hard it was is why I loved it. And then I'd say probably 4 years ago is when I kind of said, all right, I'm done playing like these winter sports in Minnesota. I'm done doing all this stuff. I really want to focus on golf, because I became addicted. And then from there, you know, I went down the rabbit hole, probably much like you did, where I started like, hey, maybe I should sign up for a tournament, play some competitive golf. You know, I joined the country club, and then just the floodgates opened. So fell in love with the sport, fell in love with all the intricacies of it. Realized like my swing was only going to take me so far, and started figuring out what I had to do to get better. Then I dove into the mental side of it. And here we are. I've got this podcast where I just kind of, it's like this creative outlet from like a, you know, personal perspective, where I like to do that type of stuff. And it's also something I'm really passionate about. And very much like you, I just love to talk to people about it. And as we know, there's so many things about the sport that relate to life and your everyday job and, you know, everything that you do. And so it's it's been a fun ride for the past couple of years, and you know, hopefully going to keep on getting better.
Well, I have no doubt you are, because you're committed to golf and on the podcast side of things. So you get to learn from awesome guests, and you get to, you know, you're just invested in it. And I think that that's such a big thing, is you got to love the game. You know, a lot of people want to have a great golf game, but they don't really want to put in the work. But knowing you as long as I have now, and seeing your, you know, consistent work ethic, you just sent me your awesome setup in the garage. Like, you're not just kind of, you know, going through the motions, hoping to get better. Like, there's plans. You're working with me. You're working with different swing coaches and stuff. So that, I think that's hopefully a lesson that everybody can just take away, is like, and a big theme of my new book is do different to get different, right? Like, we can't just want to play great. Like, if you want to get in shape, you got to do X, Y, Z. If you want to get better at golf, you got to put in the work. I think too many people just run away from that. And at the end of the day, you're doing the right stuff. So I know you will. Where are you at in terms of handicap right now? Where are you looking to get to?
Oh man, I haven't looked. So my goal is to get to a +3. Right now, my gin, I'm going to guess it says +1.5. +1.0. right at a plus one. So I just consider myself a scratch golfer. That thing's gotten as low as 2.6, and that was not attainable, or I wasn't going to be able to keep that.
Scoop coming to six?
Yeah, I went on like a heater for a month. I feel like I always do at least one summer, but I knew that was, you know, not like where my kind of cruising was. So I feel like I'm right at about a plus one. I want to get to a plus three. And, you know, decade tells me a lot of it is around the green and a lot of it is proximity to the hole. I think, you know, one of the things I always tell my buddies is they say, like, what do you focus on to get better? Because I think a lot of people just, you know, they think if they hit the range and work on stuff for an hour, it's going to kind of translate. And I've realized that, you know, I've kind of taken the decade methodology, which is like, you need to look at your game and figure out like which areas of it you need to get better at, right? Like there's kind of the five major ones. There's driving, there's iron play, there's like wedge play, and then there's chipping and there's putting. Those are kind of the five, right, that I consider. And I think finding which one of those you really need to focus on is what will take your game to the next level, not like continuing to work on the stuff that you're good on. So I've been trying to work on like wedge game and chipping primarily. And that's kind of what I'm doing over the winter, spending a lot of time on wedges and a lot of time proximity to the hole because I drive the ball really well and I have a lot of, you know, 150 and in. So that's where I'm going to spend the bulk of the time this winter and see how it translates into next year. And I feel like if I hit one more green and reg and my proximity gets another 6-7 feet closer to the hole, I'll make more putts and make less bogeys, and that'll get me there. But to be determined, I guess. That's the thesis at this
point. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. It's guessing and testing, right? That's literally all it is. You have to track your stuff, though, first and foremost. So I love that you're doing that. Again, I recommend everybody to do that. I love Decade. You love Decade for that. There's a lot of stat tracking stuff out there, but just start tracking. Like, so many people want to get better, like we said, but then they just do the same thing. They work on their strengths. They don't work on their bunkers or putting or whatever it is statistically holding them back. So I think that's such a big key. But even before, you know, getting to, you know, plus one to plus three, which is, you know, already in the top 2% of all amateur golfers. So congrats on that. Like, that's sick. But I mean, what was it like, you know, getting from 80, 81 to scratch golf? Like that's a big thing. That's really the entire emphasis of my new book. And so many golfers want to get there. So maybe what are two or three things you feel like really helped you accelerate that process?
Well, the first and the most important for sure, and I'm going a little bit on a whim here, but it was the, I'll just call it mental game. It's not necessarily like, I just mean more so like course management and being smart about the way that you play the game. Like at least when I was a shooting 80 golfer, like 80 to 85, somewhere in that realm, like everybody has those good days, right? Where you can break 80 and shoot 77, 78. But in order to be consistent and like get to where you want, you can't just like rely on, oh, I'm going to have, you know, a top 10% of all my rounds all the time. Like it's not doable. And so where it changed for me was like thinking about, you know, stuff like we've talked about, targets off the tee, playing to your misses, not just always aiming at pins, you know, like, you know, where can I actually miss this on a par five in order to get up and down? And I think what my second thing would be is that translates to bogey reduction, right? Like Scott Fawcett talks about it all the time. You need to start thinking about like how to make less bogeys and not make more birdies. And I was one of those guys that chased birdies all the time. Like I could go deep. I can make 4, 5, 6 birdies in a round. I've done it, but then I'll look back and I also make 3 double bogeys. And most of the time it was because I either chose a stupid target off the tee or, you know, I hit a shot that I wasn't capable of hitting. And so, you know, I think for anybody trying to like break 80 consistently and also get to a scratch golfer, like, you got to realize you're already really good at the game if you're able to break 80. And most of the time, it's the one or two decisions in a round that take you from a look at birdie or for sure making a par and you made a double bogey because you tried to hit a flop shot or you tried to carry water where you shouldn't have or whatever. And those two holes where you made double bogey and you're probably, you know, giving yourself a double bogey, realistically made a 7 or an 8 if you're playing tournament golf. You're giving yourself a double bogey. Those are the four strokes that bring you from like an 81 down to a 77. And all it was making the right decision wherever you were in your round. So that was big for me. And a lot of that just has to do with like, I don't know how else to say it other than like holding yourself accountable, right? Like you can't just say you're going to do it. Like you actually have to do it. It's so easy to like say you're going to do it and then you're on hole seven and you're in a bunker trying to carry water. And you're like, yeah, I got this shot. It's like, yeah, you have this shot one out of 10 times. The other nine, you're probably going in the water. Splash it out, hit it on, make a bogey, and like, get on with your round, right? And like actually doing it. That's the really hard part.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's like you have to learn the stuff. Like that's why I go, you know, I tell everyone to go through decade, learn the principles, all that. But you could know all the mental game stuff, all the course management stuff. But if you just let emotions get the best of you and you're like, oh, well, you know, I might as well send it like this. And, you know, then you just kind of invite that. So having the discipline to do it, I think it's hard. I mean, that's obviously one of the D's of decade is having that discipline. And I think that people think that it's not going to be fun, you know, when you're playing quote unquote wicked smart and you're, you know, making better decisions, but it's a lot more fun when you break 80 and then you get to scratch golf, right?
Dude, the people that, you know, have watched our, or, you know, the video I put out of our final hole, right? Like let's walk through it. We both hit what we thought were good drives. Mine was in the fairway. Yours missed the bunker by what? Let's just call it 10 feet, right? Like a couple yards. And you're dead in that thing. And I remember thinking, like, why isn't he trying to take more club and like maybe advance a little bit further? You splash it out and you hit a wedge to 4 feet and you made par. I'd say most call them like a 6 to 8 handicapper, right? They're not just going to splash that ball out of the bunker. They're not. They're probably going to try and take like an 8 or a 9 iron, try and hit it like high, do something they've never done before in a weird stance, and either like chunk it and remain in the bunker, or hit a shot that's really going to put him out. And you're like, nope, I'm going to give myself a wedge here. I'm going to give myself a look at par. And what do you know? You happen to hit it close. I think you tapped in like a 4-footer for par. And most people probably would have made a mess of that. And like, that's the difference between a scratch golfer and a 5 handicap. Like a lot of it isn't necessarily the skill. It's the decision-making and stuff that you do, you know, even when like, you know, that you got to make a par to at least stay in this match. And what do you know? You did it. Like, kudos to you. And that's the stuff that I would have done 3 years ago, or I wouldn't have done 3 years ago, and why I wouldn't have been, you know, shooting even par.
Yeah. And I was going to say that's a great observation. That was a really good example too. I mean, it happened to work out again. I'm not going to make that up and down a lot. I mean, but statistically it worked out on that one, obviously really good for the video too. But it's one of those things too, where it's like, if people just, you know, play it out a little bit and stop, you know, stop trying to play hero golf. I talk about that a lot, and it's just, I think it's just male ego getting in the way. What do you think it is?
I think it's a little ego, but it's also, it's knowing that you can hit the shot, right? Like I've had so many shots where like, I look at it and it's kind of like, you know, like Phil Mickelson, like he always sees a shot that he can hit. Like he's super highly skilled, right? He probably can. But what they don't show is the times where he's like, man, this isn't the right play. Right. I need to get myself like in a smart position here and just find a way to make par, or find a way just to make bogey and not make double or triple. And so I honestly think it's less about ego and just more of like the, you know, I think for a lot of call them weekend golfers or people trying to get there is to like, man, I can do this. And if I do it, like, this is really going to set me up the rest of the round. Or if I do it, this is really going to like be that day where I go low. Like some of these things happen. And you got to realize that the days when you actually do go low and shoot it, you're not in those positions in the first place, more times than not. And then the times that you actually do it, it's exactly what you did, where you make a really good up and down after having to punch out or after having to do something because you're capable of hitting that next shot really good. There's like the Scottie Scheffler, you know, I follow a lot of like tour stuff and caddy talk, and it's the infamous where his caddy's talking to him and he's like, let our putt be our really good shot. Like, you don't need to be a hero with this chip or this wedge. Like, let our putt be the big one. And I think he hit like a shot to maybe like 15, 20 feet and made the comebacker. Like, it's such a great example of like, you don't have to chip it to a foot. Like, you don't have to hit it inside 20 feet from 400 or from 200 yards, like with a 4 iron. It's like, there's always going to be one good shot a hole that like you have the potential to make it. Like, give yourself that shot and don't let it be for double or triple bogey.
Yeah, that's a really good perspective. I love that Scottie Scheffler moment, because it's like giving yourself chances, right? Like, there's a direct correlation. More greens in regulation lead to lower handicaps. Now, I can't measure this anywhere, but like, I just feel like the more looks you have, the better speed and distance control. Maybe if one of those putts goes in, all of a sudden you get confident. Like, I made one early today, hole felt like a bucket the rest of the day, right? So it's like giving yourself more chances, I think, sometimes, again, to just give you that confidence. Because if you're just hitting, you know, one green and then missing two or three and then hitting one, like, you a couple things. I feel like one, then you feel like every time I do hit the green, I have to try and make it because I haven't, you know, I'm not giving myself a lot of looks, which obviously is a terrible strategy. And then two, you just don't know the speed of the greens as much because you're not hitting them as much too. So I feel like if you have that discipline, then you can give yourself those looks and you can build that momentum. You know, that's kind of the big thing I always talk about too, is like the goal is to build momentum and keep it. So you've went really low. You've had a lot of birdies. And I think that one of the things I have a consistent theme with almost all mental golf coaching students at any level, maybe you're breaking 90, 80, breaking par, whatever. Everybody worries or struggles sometimes when they're getting out of their comfort zone and they're going low or they're off to a hot start. What do you do when you feel like you're off to a good start? What are some strategies maybe you've tried to adhere to or learn from any guests on your show just to kind of keep your foot on the gas and keep going low?
Man, I struggled with this for a long time. And I remember having the combo with, have you talked with Justin Kraft?
Yeah, Justin was awesome.
Yeah. So I talked with him about this and this is before I had any low rounds of the year. Like this was kind of my year where I actually broke through that a little bit. And, you know, because I had been 1, 2, 3 under before, then I let it get in my head. And what I noticed the times that I let it get in my head and I got back to even was that I was thinking ahead. I was like, man, I'm at, you know, 2 under make of the turn, right? Like I can, this can be my low one. And the second that you get ahead, you start thinking about shots that you haven't hit. You're not focusing on the shot or the present shot that you need to hit. And that's what happens. And so I think just from like a, you know, golf perspective, like it's going through your process. And I this never made sense to me when PGA Tour players said it never made sense to me until I actually did it, which was like, I need to stay in my process. I need to, you know, control what I can control. The outcomes are going to be the outcome. There's like a shot by shot thing. And the second you're on 17T, looking forward to what 18 is going to bring you, you're no longer in your process, right? Like you're no longer thinking about that shot. And so this year I tried to like hone in on that. And the first thing I always thought about was staying within my process. But then I also thought like when I had it going, Mario Tiziani, he plays on the senior tour. He's a member out at our club. And he said, dude, the days that you got it going, you got to go, you know, like stuff's working. You got to take that compass and like, you have to go. And so, you know, it's this balance of, you know, staying in your process, but also like being aggressive, you know, to your target. It's not to the extent that you're, you know, trying to do stuff you're not capable of, but like being aggressive to your targets and knowing that like your swing's really good, your tempo's really good that day, your putting's really good that day. And, you know, just again, being aggressive to certain shots that you know you're capable of. So process is the number one thing for sure. But then the other thing is that, you know, when you've got it going, like, take advantage and have fun with that.
Yeah.
Like I haven't had too many of those rounds, but I've had a couple where like you said, the hole feels like a bucket, man. And the swing is just pure for that day. And like, you've got to enjoy it and have fun. And I remember thinking, man, I'm at 4, let's get to 5. Like I'm at 5, let's get to 6. Like it starts to flow and you get that confidence. And you know, the same thing goes for those days when you don't have it.
Yeah.
It can be really hard to like hone it back if you say, hey, like trust the process, go through it. This is golf. This is why this sport is so hard. And this is why we love it.
I've well said. I feel like I've already read the second book because process is buried in that thing a lot and repeated because I think it's obviously good for the reasons you just mentioned, but it gives you something to think about because if you don't have a process, then you do think about the results. And if you actually want the good results, which everybody does, and then you just focus on your process. I do this step. I take my steps here, you know, or my swings here, and then I walk in here, I breathe here. Then you have something to focus on instead of like, oh my God, I could shoot my best round ever. I could win this tournament, whatever it is. So it's like you give yourself that ability. And of course, you're gonna have rounds. Like I always remind people, and I'm glad you said this, like, when you're playing good, lean into it. Like a lot of people get into like, oh, I got to protect this thing, right? I mean, how many times have we got off to a hot start and be like, oh, let's just make some pars here. Like that's not the strategy. It's human nature, right? To try and probably guard that position. You're out of your comfort zone. This is new area to you, but you do have to stay consistent with the, I guess how well you're swinging. And I like how you said, what was it? Swinging aggressively to your spots. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Like swing aggressive or like swing confident, but like, you know, to the targets that you still have, you know, your target still might be 7 yards left or 7 feet left of the pin, like swing aggressive to it, like put a good, like not one of those timid swings that we all know that we powers like kind of give up on it, or you kind of like just trying to get it on. Like, no, you can still swing aggressive and try and get it close, or try and get it close to your target. So I think Tiger talks about that a lot.
Yeah, I was going to say Tiger talks about that. I think Scott has talked about it on mine, talking about Tiger and how he said that, you know, swinging aggressively to his spots. I think that's so key. We were in this little two-man scramble today, and my buddy hit a really, we had a really tough shot, like 238 back pin, watered the entire left side. Anything short actually is kind of water. It was a tough shot now that I look at it and played the course. And I saw him kind of guide it, you know, a little bit. It ended up working out. He got on the front. Then that gave me the ability to kind of swing freely. But it's just, I think that was immediately showed me like, man, sometimes we just have to remember to pick your target, go through your routine, and you got to be okay with it, right? Like, you have to be all right with just understanding that it's still golf. Like, there's still shot variability. There's left, right, short, long. Like, and so it's like giving yourself as much tools as you can to have that success, but then being okay with what happens if, you know, you do hit a bad shot, because that's still part of golf, no matter how focused you can be. So what do you do for, you know, your process? Do you have anything after the shot, or do you, have you dealt with any anger or stuff like that? Or is that just me?
Well, I've never been, I shouldn't say never. I think everybody's gotten, you know, angry, if you will. But the more that I've played with really good players, the more I notice they don't get angry, which is really interesting. I mean, like, yeah, you know, sometimes we'll see it on tour and stuff. Like, I'd say, you know, 90, 95% of like the really good golfers that I see, they've already gone through a lot of the stuff that we're still learning, right? They're playing at that elite level. And a lot of them, like, you know, they might get frustrated, but they don't let like the anger, like the club throwing or breaking or whatever, like take it like to the next level. You know, it's kind of what Tiger always says. He's like, you can be mad for, I can't remember how many seconds. He's like 10 seconds. And then you're on to the next part, because like you can't change it, right? Like it happens. You're just going to let it bleed into your, you know, the rest of your round. So like for me, after a shot, whether it's good or bad, I usually just try and tell myself like, you know, on to the next one, or like, I'll try to think about what that next shot is going to be, whether it's a putt or an iron shot or a chip. And I'll kind of like think in my mind, like, hey, what's this going to look like? It's a lot easier when you really know a course and kind of know where you're at. But even on places that you don't know, like, you know, hey, I just hit a really good drive. I'm going to be in the fairway. I know I'm probably going to have a decent lie. And I'm generally going to be this far away. Like, what am I going to do? And like, I'm either in the cart or I'm walking, kind of thinking about that already. And without really knowing it, you're putting what's already happened in the past, right? Like, you're thinking forward onto your next shot, whatever you're going to do. I think that helps you prepare for what's next and kind of staying in that moment.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, one of the things is that holds a lot of people back from going from, you know, 82 to 76. You know, we talked about the doubles and the stupid shots and stuff. It's just reducing those blow up holes. So when you were going through your journey, and obviously we still, you know, have to always kind of beware of those doubles or worse sometimes. Do you have anything you try and do after, you know, a really tough shot, you know, uncharacteristically bad, or something after maybe a double that you do make to like kind of bounce back? Is there any mantra you use, or is that just kind of go back to the process?
It's not a mantra. I usually go back and I figure out like what I did wrong. And again, 9 out of 10 times I made a dumb decision. And so like, let's talk about the 1 out of 10 first, right? It's like the 1 out of 10, I did everything that I effectively wanted to try to do, right? Like, it was the right decision. I just hit a bad shot. And sometimes you have to be okay with hitting bad shots. It happens all the time. And pros will tell you all the time, golf is a game of misses. And unfortunately for scratch golfers, or you know, low handicappers, like, our bad shot, you know, might be out of bounds or might be in the water. And, you know, professional golfers' bad shot's going to be like 10 yards left in the rough, right? So I think there's having that perspective, and just knowing like, hey, I hit a bad shot. Like, let's go make it up. We got however many holes left to make it up and hit some good shots and give ourselves looks. On the other 9 out of 10, whenever I look back and something dumb happened, it's usually I just made the bad decision. I go, Jordan, what are you doing? Like, you know that you shouldn't have done that. You did it anyways. And look what happened. Like, learn from it and know that next time you shouldn't do that. So I think it's just like, you know, you have to go back and you have to learn from your mistakes. A lot of the times I think through it. This is why I love Decades so much, because, you know, you play your round, but then it's a lot different when you sit in front of a computer screen and you go shot by shot and you go, you know, did I execute what I was trying to do? And like, usually I'll have this 2-3 hole stretch where I just forget. And like, that's the hard part. And like, that's like the training part. And that's the learning part of like the mental or decade side of it, which is like, okay, I had a 3-hole stretch there where I just forgot my entire process. And I kind of got back to it because I realized I forgot it. And that's just part of like learning and growing, right? And I think the more that you do it, the more it like becomes engraved in a part of you. But, you know, it's going to happen. You're going to forget. You're going to blast sometimes and just and not do it. And then, you know, learning from those mistakes in the future, doing it differently. That's how ultimately you get better.
Yeah. One thing I really like from Decade, and I was talking to my buddy about it today, is making the decisions when you're, you know, logical and not rational. So it's like if you're, you know, especially before tournaments, before I play in tournaments, you know, unless they change the tee box or something, I know every club I'm going to hit. Par threes, you know, a little variability, but I know if I'm hitting 3-wood, I know if I'm hitting driver, mini driver, hybrid, whatever it is. Like, I want to minimize any irrational thinking, just because what if I make double behold before, then I, you know, sometimes ego, whatever it is, gets in the way. And then I'm like trying to do it. So I like that part of Decade too. And like you said, like separating yourself, like spending 10 minutes doing those stats after the round is so key, because everybody wants to get better, right? Everybody that listens to my show and your show, they want to get better. People don't just play golf just to be like, yeah, I'm going to play this way forever. Like, everybody innately wants to get better, but you got to figure it out and you got to have that time to kind of go through it and like just say, hey, what did I do right today? What did I do wrong today? Like, I think that's one of those things where if people did that, like you just said, spending those 10 minutes, you go through and you start to develop patterns. Wow. You know, I made a 3-putt here, then I hit a stupid shot on the next hole or whatever it is. You know, you start to kind of identify those things. Is there anything else you do before or after rounds or in the off season to kind of analyze your game?
I mean, aside from Decade, I'm not joking. I'll actually talk to my friends or people I consider close to me about my game and ask them like what they think. And a lot of times there's a very common theme. You know, like after this year, I just kind of like, you know, I was talking to my friends or whatever, and they're like, dude, I think what takes you to the next level is your short game. Like, I think your short game, you know, can improve like and get better. It seems like you know, do this well, miss well, but I don't think you chip it close enough, or I've seen you, you know, like duff chips. Like, that I'll go back and look at Decade, and it tells me the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But it really is interesting to get other people's perspective on your game, because you might think you're not that good at something, and somebody looks at your game and they'll tell you like, no, that's not what I see at all. That's not what I feel at all. I mean, I thought forever that I actually wasn't that great of a driver of the ball. And I don't know if it's because my perception of reality of like needing to hit it far in the fairway every time was one thing, and then you realize like hitting it far in the rough could actually be okay. And then once I kind of got over that, I was like, man, it's not my driving that's holding me back. It's my iron play and my chipping. And then, you know, another one from this year was my pitch.
Before you go into the
60 yards.
We got to talk about your driving before we go into that, because you put on a clinic when we played.
Well, that was a good day.
That was a good day, but that's so there's a couple lessons from that. One, nice job. I want from me to you just to tell you that was awesome. Like, that was fun to watch. I hit it pretty good that day, but you hit it better off the tee. I mean, that's awesome to watch. So driving's big. It's one of the biggest keys to breaking 80, getting to scratch golf, getting to plus handicaps. What are you doing, or what have you done, or how have you evolved your driving to improve to where it was? Because I don't know if you missed a fairway, maybe you did, but if it was, it was not in any hazard or anything. You were not giving yourself tough shots, but how has your driver evolved? Because that's a huge key people need to unlock.
So when I practice the driver, I do what you would call like randomized target practice, and I play games with myself on the range. Because I think for a long time, driver's that one club that everybody goes to the range and they hit and they feel like it's really good, and then you get on the course and it's not. And I think that reason is like a driving range is really big, right? Like, I don't think people realize how much smaller a golf hole is than a driving range. And so what I would start to do is I'll set up on the driving range and I'll hit to different targets every single time. I'll pick really small targets and I'm like trying to hit them and land them there. And if I don't get there, I gotta redo it again. And it's not just like, you know how when you set up on a driving range, generally like you're kind of in your own little box. You know, I'll pick a target literally 100 yards left of what would be considered my center, or like 70 yards right, where my body is completely like aimed, you know, somewhere that looks like it's not even on the driving range. Like, you have to kind of mix up the way that you align yourself, because like I think everybody understands this concept. A wedge shot, right? Like, your dispersion is always like the closer you are, the more you can get to the hole. the further away you are, those misses with your club face or angle, we're talking about 5, 10, 15, 20 yards offline, right? The further that it goes. And so when I practice, I try to hit to really small targets. And then when I get out on the course, I'm a lot more comfortable with those targets. I think that's a really big thing that not a lot of people do. They tee it up at the same spot every time. You're always square to your target on a driving range and you hit it and it feels good. And then you get out there and a tee box might be off-centered. You're hitting to like the right side of the fairway. All of a sudden your body's actually out of whack and you're hitting these slices and hooks everywhere. You're like, what the hell's going on? It's like, well, you're not just hitting on a straight line every single time anymore.
Yeah.
You're hitting to a golf hole.
How do you pick targets?
So I pick an intermediate target. So I always, where the ball I want to end, right? So like as a visual, let's say you have a, you know, 350-yard fairway that's straight out in front of you. I want to aim up the middle to give myself the biggest dispersion. And then I stand directly behind the ball and I draw like a straight line out to that, you know, spot that I want to land it. And I pick something about 6 to 10 feet in front of me. And that's where I align my club face. And then I align my feet and then I go. And I try not to think about it too much. It's like, hey, that spot that I just picked, that's like the best line that you can possibly pick. As long as you're like relatively there, good. I think a lot of times people pick a target, you'd be amazed when they set up behind it how far off of that target line they are. Because they either haven't picked an intermediate target or what their eyes think is completely another thing. Right. So I try and pick something small right out in front of me and just like trust that line. And the more you trust it, it's really interesting how much better you'll hit it.
I'm glad you brought up alignment too. I was playing today with my buddy and every once in a while this stupid pull hook comes out and it's been fighting like hell to beat it. And I hit the driver really well most holes, but there was this one that came up today and I could feel myself aimed right. And I asked him, I'm like, he's like, yeah, dude, you're way right. So I think my body was just, you know, off a little bit. And so I think that people need to practice driver, obviously, right? You got to find the right driver. You got to practice driver. I like how you said mixing up targets. I think that's a good idea too. You got to find your shot shape, but then you also need to check your alignment. You know, like I don't feel like enough people actually do that. And I feel like that comes from like recording and kind of looking at your swing. Sometimes we got some great videos when we played and, you know, it's nice to record your swing on the course sometimes too. Do you ever record your swing in practice and like look at it? Or is that something you feel like you could improve with?
All the time. I didn't, and I'd say I started about 2 years ago, and it significantly helped my swing.
So you do record a lot from that being down the line?
I record a lot. I mean, you learn so much, and again, it's like a feel versus real thing. Like you feel like you're doing something when in reality you're usually not. So I record almost every time I'm on the range practicing. I usually don't like look at my swing before a round.
No, I wouldn't recommend that.
Wanted to, like, if I had set thoughts up, I don't know. Like,
shit's not changing that fast.
Exactly. So I record a lot when I practice. And you can do a lot indoors too, man. Like, you can feel so much indoors and kind of see what's going on with your swing and your hands and your body. And it's amazing. Like, my thing lately has been my head really dips towards the ball. Mm-hmm. Then comes back. And a lot of it is because I realized I do this without knowing. I didn't know it until I saw my swing. When I set up, I sit back on my heels. I don't know why. I put weight into my heels. And so when I swing, I move towards my toes. It's amazing. I noticed that and I set up for a swing. I put more weight into my toes. I swung. I looked at it and my head barely moved. I'm like, God dang it. Like, it was just something so little of like this thing that I didn't even know I was doing. And I saw it once. It was such an easy fix, right? So it's little stuff like that that you notice.
Yeah, I mean, record your swing regularly, everyone. Like, I just think that because you start to develop, like, you know, I tell everyone, like, first develop your peak performance checklist of what you do mentally during good rounds, right? Same thing goes with driving and, you know, any part of the game, like record your stuff because a slump will happen or you will, you know, find this time where golf feels really hard, putting, driving, anything. But when you record your swing regularly, you start to develop a kind of a library of good stuff and maybe some bad stuff. And then you can kind of self-assess and hopefully quickly fix. So I'm glad that you've been doing that. And I want everyone to listen, like buy the iRange sports stick, love that thing. Do something to record your swing and also record your short game and putting. Nobody, if anyone does record, it's usually full swing because everybody wants to post on Instagram. But man, when you like check out the short game stuff too, that's so much easier to fix on your own. So I wish people would do that. And I also want to tell you, One tool that I've been using a lot in practice, I know you got some cool stuff in your garage set up there, is the new, it's called the alignment mirror from Wygolf. And so it is this little, I don't have it here, but it's like a little shape like this. It fits in the apparel pocket of your bag. And then it has these two little like alignment sticks you put into it. But basically, the alignment is your feet on the poles, and then you can actually see your head in the mirror, and you can see your shoulders. So it's nice because when you are doing block practice, especially when you're inside and it's, you know, kind of just repetitive and it's hard to always see where you're going, when you use that, it's nice because you can make sure your positions are good. And like, you know, if your head's getting back or like you said, too far forward sometimes, it's a really cool tool. So I was just going to say maybe check that out too.
I'm a big Wygolf guy. I have a bunch of their stuff. I use their alignment disc inside. And then I have their putting mirror. I don't have the swing mirror, so I'll have to look at it. But I've used their putting mirror for years.
Oh, the putting thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Yep. I've been working with them for a while. I had the creator, Brad, on the podcast. If you haven't had him on yours, by the way, you should. He's the man. And they have a very cool story because they're only a few years old. And I think they're some of the best training aids out there.
Yeah, I would love to. I think I actually, I don't know if you've noticed, I've been doing this kind of like practice session that I post every week. One, to hold myself accountable, but two, for whatever reason, people really like to see like how people practice. So I'll do like this 90-second video. I go through like what I did for drills, for chipping, putting, driving, irons, all this stuff. And I shouted them out this week because I had like, I used like three different Wygolf training. Yeah. I got the alignment disc, I got the putting mirror, and I used their, you know, orange, their signature colors, orange or whatever. I used those alignment sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of that too, that's actually kind of where I wanted to get into is like, what are you doing in practice? I know we got the off season, but you're grinding. You're not just letting the clubs collect dust until whenever you can get back out, right? You're definitely doing the right stuff. But I think a big problem, people want to practice, whether it's in season, off season, simulators, range, but people don't really know what to do. So what are some of their favorite drills? You mentioned the driver variable practice. What are some other things you like to do either at the sim or range?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm definitely in simulator season right now. My goal is always to play outside. If I travel for work or do something, try and play once when I travel. But right now, it's definitely simulator range time. So when I'm in the sim or like when I'm practicing, I always try and practice like technique and feels first. Again, like for anybody that's simulator practicing, you know, like you usually got like an hour or two max if you're renting something. Fortunately for me, I set one up in my garage, but again, like you don't really want to have like 4 hour practice sessions indoors, you know, it's like an hour or two max. And so I work on technique and feels a lot. I think like the off season, just for anybody, you hear pros talk about it all the time. Like I think Rory just said he went 3 weeks without even looking at where his ball was going. He was just changing like his path, right? Something very small for him, but still took him 3 weeks to do without ever looking at like where a ball was going. And that's the thing that changed the way I practiced the most was, and I'm still kind of coping with it, which is realizing like in order to make significant changes, you can't care where the ball goes. Like you can't care about shanking it. You can't care about hitting snap hooks. Like you're literally trying to change all your motor functions that you've had for the last year, two, three plus years. And so I work on technique a lot. And aside from that, you know, however much time I have, I break it up and I try to focus on whether it's something I'm specifically working on or different areas of the game. I used to just get carried away with hitting driver, man. Like I would look at the clock and I'd be like, man, I just hit driver for an hour. And so now it's like I set times of like an hour, 15 minutes of technique, 15 of chipping, 15 of putting, 15 of irons and driver. And so really, you know, breaking it out between the different stuff that I need to work on and not just honing in on one thing. You really got to, I mean, golf is a game of a lot of different swings and a lot of different techniques and strategies. So you got to practice all of them. Otherwise, you may as well practice none of them.
Yeah, it's like a constant test, right? It's like you have to be doing stuff that is going to help your game, but you also have to stay mentally engaged. It's a, you know, and you got to find, I feel like you have to go into it focused. Like when I talked with Mark Immelman earlier this year, that's what he said. It's like, whether it's a 20-minute or 2-hour session, like have a focus, like obviously a plan, but like specifically not even a plan. Like you can have a plan, like you just said, 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes or whatever. But if you're not focused during that, it's okay. Do you practice with headphones or music or anything?
Sometimes I'll turn that on. Otherwise, I turn on a lot of like YouTube golf instructor content because I find that when I'm practicing and like listening to different stuff, it helps unlock different like feels or little things. Golf's such a weird game where, you know, everybody's swing is a little bit different. And every now and again, I'll find like a little tip or a little something, and all of a sudden it'll click, like it'll translate into like what I'm trying to work on. So I usually try and have something golf related on, because then it keeps me thinking about like what I'm doing, as opposed to like, if I just have music or the TV on, like I'll focus on that. And like you said, that I'm not like really practicing, I'm just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about, kind of keeping your mind open to those ideas. It is, it's, you're only one swing away from figuring it out, right? That's why
I ask you. 100%.
Do you, how do you keep track of all your swing thoughts or swing feels? Do you have like a note in your phone? Do you like, cause you know, when you play it as long as you have, and I have, like, I mean, it's a myriad of notes and different things like that. What's your strategy to kind of keep track of that? And like, how does that translate to actually bringing those feels or thoughts to the course?
Well, so I'm kind of crazy. I've got a notepad. I should share it with you sometime. It's literally got all my clubs, their lofts, their lies, their shafts, like everything. Because I'm that type of person that when I do change something, I want to know what and why I'm changing it. So like, for example, like a shaft, you know, I change it like, well, okay, why am I making, like, why am I actually changing my shaft? And so also in that notepad, I've got my feels, and then, you know, we're going to like work on a wedge matrix this winter and stuff like that. But then like around the green chips, putting feels, techniques, drills, I've got all of it documented. So whenever I'm struggling or if I need to like find something, I always go back to that notepad. And it's usually like, oh man, like, yeah, I was feeling this when I was hitting it really good. Like, why? And yeah, it's just a big notepad of kind of everything. And then, you know, it changes. Like recently I deleted a few things because I'm changing something else. Like I may have had a feel that was, you know, for that swing that I had at the time or that technique I was using at the time that is no longer relevant. But I think it's important to kind of document, like when you are hitting it good, like what are you feeling? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, it's usually one or two things. It's not like eight or nine things. And I think that's where people go wrong.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because I was looking, we played this course today. I hadn't played there in like almost 9 years, I think, or something. And I was like, I have a feeling I still have a yardage book though. I have this bin in my garage. It's so geeky and so awesome. Probably almost every course in Arizona, I have a yardage book for. And so I found this old one. It was like a shop one. It was like a $5, $10 one, you know. But in there, I found some old notes. And I used to always have, I still do a lot, I keep note cards, and I'd have my feel for the day. And I was like looking back, I'm like, shit, I can't believe I got away from that. Like, that's a really good feel, you know. And so it's like, they're all over though. I got notes, I got note cards. So I need to get better about organizing it all in a way so that, you know, when things do go bad, it's like, okay, if I was pulling it here, or, you know, if I was doing this. So I'm glad you document it. And I recommend everybody to do it. Like, I remember when I went to Tony Robbins in 2017, he talked about document your life, you know, write in journals, take pictures, like document as much as you can. Same thing, I think, with golf. Like when you, like we said, when you record your swing is great, but then document what's going right, what you're thinking about, because some things you can't always capture. And then you can, you know, kind of have that Rolodex when you need to figure it out a little bit.
Oh yeah. I've had those moments where like I get back from a round and I want to quit. Right. And I go, okay, settle down. Let's take a look at the swing. And then like, you know, I usually take a video and I'm like, why are you doing that? And I go look at my notes and it's like, man, you didn't do that at all. And like, I fix it in like 10 minutes. It's just, it's crazy how fast the game can turn on you. I think the hard thing mentally for like anybody, like, well, whatever level is, you know, you had those good rounds, like, you know, it's in there, right? Like, you know, the good golfer's in there and you wonder why the bad golfer comes out. And really at this point, it's all about getting a lot more consistent and not letting the bad come out as much as, you know, maybe the good should, because we've all had those good rounds. Like, we all know we're capable of it.
Yeah.
And so like, how can you unlock that more?
Totally. When, you know, when you obviously had started getting really into golf, then you decided to start a podcast. I'd love to, you know, share a little bit more. I've obviously talked about you guys on my show, but, you know, what's your podcast all about? What are you doing with it right now? What's the goal for 2025 and beyond?
Man, I wish we had like a better quote unquote strategy, if you will. But like, the reason we started is because we love golf. Like, that's why we started it. And, you know, for us, I want to say us, myself and Andy. Andy just had a kid. So I've taken on a lot of the interviews and stuff lately. I think he's talking with Kenji, who's data analytics guy for the Ryder Cup team, which is going to be cool.
Nice.
But like, in general, it's all because we love this sport and like, I'm a learner of it. Like I said, it's also a creative outlet, but like, moving forward, I think we've kind of found maybe not a niche, but something we really enjoyed, which is talking with caddies, aspiring pros, and call it like elite level amateur golfers. Mm-hmm. I think when we started, we had this general idea of like, hey, golf is kind of missing this, I don't know the right way to say it, other than like kind of like club golfer or like elite level amateur golf play. You know, we saw a lot of podcasts on how to break 80, how to break 90, you know, like the breezy golfs of the world that are like really making golf and the sport fun, which is great. Like, I love that stuff. I think it's really fun to watch. What I felt was missing, or maybe something that we're trying to deep dive into, is kind of like, hey, what's golf like for that kind of in between of, you know, maybe like a pro or an aspiring pro and maybe like a good golfer. Like, there's this niche of, call it plus handicappers like you and I, that like love this game, but no one really talks about it. And I don't know if that's like college level golfers or like elite level amateur player, what have you. Like, that's kind of the niche we're trying to tap into, because for us, like, it's how we learn and it's how like we play the game. But it also seems like it's not something that gets talked about a lot, which is like, you know, whether it's country club golf or elite level amateur stuff, I don't hear anybody talk about it. I hear everybody talk about the PGA Tour and maybe like Korn Ferry stuff. I don't hear anybody talk about like elite college level players and elite level amateur players that are playing in tournaments, because it's a high level part of the game that you see with a lot of other sports, but for whatever reason, we don't see it in golf. So I think see a lot more of that kind of moving forward, which is talking to people trying to get to that level or trying to play tournaments, or people like you that play a ton of tournament golf and just love the game, right? Like, there's that part of the game that feels a little bit untapped. So we've been we're talking to a lot of caddies, a lot of college golfers, a lot of aspiring pros or elite level AMs. And I've had a lot of fun with those conversations recently. And also like pros, like club pros, you know, like a lot of club pros, like Justin Kraft and our guy, Luke Elfner, and Bennett Schmid is at Wiper Yacht Club. They're all like plus threes and plus fours.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you don't know it. And then you talk with them, you're like, holy cow, I mean, you've got like a story, like you can still play. There's a reason that you coach, right? Because you're good at it. So
yeah, there are some of the coaches that, I mean, unfortunately, there's too many coaches that can't break 80. That's terrifying. But yeah, no, it's good that they can walk the talk. You know, I had Derek Dominski on, and he earlier in the year, and he was talking about, you know, how he still loves tournaments and how that makes him a better coach as well. So I'm glad that you're able to interview those guys and have that conversation. I don't think I've had a caddy on, now that I think about it. I mean, I've had a mini tour pro that kind of caddies, but yeah, nothing. I need to tap into that too. What are some things you've learned from maybe some of the guests that you feel like have directly impacted your game?
The biggest thing I always learn is that there's a million different ways to approach the game, but there's a lot of consistencies in the elite level players. And what I mean is, like, you know, everybody's got their own kind of swing. Everybody's got their own, you know, kind of thoughts about the game. But when you really like dive deep into like the crux of what people are talking about or saying at the elite level, you come across a lot of the same stuff, which is like, which is process, which is, you know, at a certain point, chipping and putting and like proximity to the hole is how you lower your scores. Bogey reduction is how you lower your scores. And so like, it's hilarious. You know, you'll go through a hour long combo with an elite level player or a caddy, and they're talking about like being on the bag for their guys. And you really come across the same things, which is like, everybody goes through the highs and lows. But the one thing that's consistent with the elite level players is their process. And the way that you get better is by hitting it closer to the hole, and kind of playing the odds, right? And like, you never know when like your week is going to be your week or your round is going to be your round. And it's just, it's really fascinating when you break it down that way, because there's so, like, you know, this being kind of like in the industry now, like all the different people you follow on Instagram and YouTube and the coaches and the equipment and all this stuff, you can get so lost in just all of it. When at the crux, there's like, if you do 3, 4, 5 things really, really good, you're going to get a hell of a lot better, a hell of a lot quicker if you kind of like factor out a lot of the noise. And so I've really started to realize that a lot of people are saying the same things, just in a little different way.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And that's why I like talking to different people from different backgrounds, different experience levels, because like you said, a lot of them can say the same thing or have the same message, but say it differently. And like, I interpret that message different than you might, and or that person, you know, or that person listening. So it's nice to have a variety of voices on. And sometimes, you know, you think an episode's going to be really click with that person, but then, you know, your friend's like, wow, I really like this other person. So it's cool to interview different names in game, in the game like that. Anyone or any type of players you're shooting for to, or to continue get, or just like this is kind of your niche moving forward, it sounds like?
No, I mean, we're always going to, I mean, look, like, again, the
if cyber luck, calls, you're gonna be okay.
Well, there's so much in the sport, right, that you can talk about. I think like we get a ton of enjoyment talking with aspiring pros or elite level AMs or that type of stuff. But like, I'm fortunate enough, so I play with John Ellis. He's Wyndham Clark's caddy. He's very well connected within like the golf, industry or like world, if you will. So knows a lot of other caddies, knows a lot of other players. You know, there's a chance we might have some really cool people on in the years because of that, or maybe go to some more tournaments and get connected at that level, which will be really cool. Like, that's one thing I haven't done yet, is maybe talk to like a top 100 player. But it's weird, like I've played with Eric Van Rooyen, and like you see it in real life, and it's wild, man. Like, yeah, it truly is a completely different level. Like, I know they make it look so easy, but like when you watch and see that stuff in person, it's just different, man. Like it sounds different. You see that they got it, and like you see what makes a pro so good. I also got to play with Adrian Dumont de Chassar on the tour, and it was hilarious. Like, we played together, and maybe like the 2-3 times he missed a green, he hit it to a foot. Didn't matter where he was from a bunker or wherever. And it's like, it's crazy to see the elite level like of golf that those guys can play at. It truly is remarkable. So I'd really love to talk to somebody at that level and see what their mind is like, right? Like, I think their mind is a lot different. Like, we see them on TV, we see them talk, but even those guys that maybe used to play on tour, they've got a different way of thinking about stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm so glad you said the sound. The sound of a PGA Tour driving range, everyone should go and just close your eyes and like listen to it. It's beautiful. Like, most people are always like wanting to see the shot, but it's like, when you hear it, you're like, damn, that's, you can just hear a crisp golf shot, right? Like, that's a wild.
Every iron is flushed. Every drive sounds like it's shot out of a cannon.
Yeah.
And even like I love hearing the chips around the green. You can hear that click. You can hear that like perfect click that we're all chasing when you kind of nip one good. Like we were talking about before, you had one of those today, like where you just nip a good 50 yarder and you can just hear it. You know, it's perfect. That's how every shot for them is. It's pretty cool.
Love it, man. Well, I'll definitely link to the podcast and encourage everybody listening here to check you out. And you have some cool guests over there. So before getting into my last question, what is the best place for everyone to follow you and listen?
We're just on Instagram and all the major channels that you'd expect, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think on Instagram, we're just Member Guests. Might be an underscore after that, but we're the black and green logo. We're growing slowly but surely. I think people find a lot of value in kind of the grind of like a scratch golfer and elite level amateur golfer. I think a lot of people want to get there. So I have some good nuggets, and we have some good people on too. The John Ellis episode was great, talking about his days as a pro and then now caddying and playing with Wyndham and all the other caddies out there. There's some cool stories in that one. And I think, who am I having on soon? Gosh, who is it? I can't remember now, but I'm trying to focus a little bit in the off season on like the why golf would be a great introduction, the stuff that makes you a little bit better. Like, I'm kind of diving into maybe some of the, whether it's training age, like, you know, our friend Luke Benoit, he's got a really interesting way or kind of new way of thinking about how to practice and talk about like motor skills and things like that. So if you want to get better in the off season, probably have some good episodes coming out on that topic.
Nice, man. Definitely. We'll link to everything in here. And for my last question, I don't even know if it's a question/question and suggestion. I want you to play
like a smirk on your face.
Well, it's because I want you to play at tournaments next year, because you're a solid golfer. And I mean that. I'm not just inflating the ego. You're a great player. You beat me. We had a great match. We didn't even get to talk about it. We were talking about so much other stuff today, but you know, that that to me, I feel like is the next step for players that are elite amateurs, is to get in the ring. Because not only are you going to learn a lot, it's going to be fantastic content for you and your audience. And it's going to be cathartic in a sense, because you have that like, wow, I did everything I thought it was going to be and I played shitty, but I learned from it and it made a great podcast episode. And then I was able to talk to this person. So it's like, it's cool. And I have just seen so much growth in myself and my own game. And I thought I couldn't love the game anymore. And, you know, and then I started playing like a lot of tournaments and I'm like, oh my God, it's just it's next level. So what is your plan? I know you had wanted to, we talked about it in one of our last coaching calls, but like, what are your thoughts on tournament golf and, you know, what's your plan for next year?
Yeah, it makes you better. It's interesting you say that, because going back to, you know, when I reached out to one of my guys I golf with a lot, I asked him how to get better. And two of them had said, you need to play more tournament golf. So I've played, you know, like our club championship, the second lead tournament, like some stuff at the clubs, but we're talking about like, you know, MGA Minnesota events. I played in the mid-am the last 2 years, made the cut both times. That was great, but I'm going to play in some more next year. I have a goal to play in like five. So going up from like one to five, and I obviously have some stuff at our club, but yeah, you get better. And I think you also have an appreciation for how much more difficult the sport may be than you think. You know, it's a lot different when you do have to put out two footers. It's a lot different when you have to count every out of bounds stroke, and you have like, it's interesting too how your strategy changes for the better, I think, when you play tournament golf, because you really go into that mode of bogey avoidance and not making birdies, knowing that like every shot really counts. And you got to turn the score in, and it's going to be on a website, and your name's going to be attached to it.
Yeah.
You know? And you want it to be a good score. But I think it just gets you more comfortable with the game too. Like you start to realize when you just go play a casual game with your buddies, I don't want to say this in a mean way, but like how it doesn't actually matter as much as you may have thought it did. Like when you play a tournament round and you see kind of everybody there and like the time you're putting into it and how you're preparing for it, it just makes the rest of golf seem maybe a little bit easier, maybe free you up when you're not playing tournament golf. So that was definitely something I noticed this year, and I'm really going to lean into going into next year, is like, I'm going to have tournament golf, and everything else is like, you know, like we're fortunate to be able to go play and play for fun and like enjoy it. And, you know, that like that 3-4 footer doesn't mean as much. Like, yeah, it's still a stroke is worth a stroke, but like, you're going to step up to it and you're going to be so much more confident over it than you were. And the more tournament golf you play, I think the better you'll get at little stuff like that.
Nice, man. Well, I'm looking forward to your tournament journey. I'd love to have you on next year after you play in some of those tournaments and, you know, to go through the process of getting into them and warming up and, you know, the practice rounds and what you were thinking about during, you know, multi-day events. I think that'd be a really fun episode, because a lot of people are right where you're at. They're like, man, I really like this. I want to start getting into the tournament side of things. Maybe it's even just the first club championship, or maybe it is a state event or whatever, you know, tournament they can find that they want to get into. I think that would be a really cool episode. So I'm rooting you on. It's been a fun conversation, and wishing you and the podcast all the best, man.
Yeah, man, you can clip this, and you're not telling me to say this, and you know, I'll say it for you or like anybody else. Like, it really has helped having somebody just to talk to about this stuff. You know, there's like the strategy stuff we talk about and all those things too, but like, you know, having like somebody on the mental side like yourself, or I know there's a lot of people out there that do similar stuff that you do, like people should go find someone just to talk to, even if it's just once or twice a year. Like, it's not like you're my mental golf coach and we talk every single week, right? Like, I think we've had a couple sessions. We were lucky we got to play together. So now you know my game and it makes it a little different. But like, it does make a difference. Like, when you have to say it out loud, the things that you're working on or the things you want to change, or getting feedback maybe from somebody that doesn't know your game saying, hey, have you tried this? Have you looked at this? Because it's way different when you talk to somebody who knows about that stuff than when you talk to your buddies, right? Like, it has been super helpful, and I appreciate it. So I think anybody listening, whether it's through you or somebody else or some other outlet, like, take the mental side seriously. Like, talk to somebody, read a book, do Decade. Do something to challenge the mental side of your golf game, and I guarantee you it's going to help out, because it's helped me out a lot, and I know other people have too. So
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. It's been awesome working with you, and I have no doubts you're gonna keep crushing it. And I always joke, you know, I'm like a golf shrink, because no, your girlfriend, your wife, they don't care nearly as much about your game. So I'm happy.
Nobody cares.
I know. I care. Why not? But you know, I do. So that's all that matters, right? And a lot of people do. And it is nice. I've worked with so many different coaches. I've had John Weir of Mental Golf Type and sports psychologists and other stuff like that. And you're right. It's nice just to like feel like you're not in this alone. And sometimes you're banging your head against the wall trying to figure it out, and then you present an idea to someone else that's maybe been through some stuff or has some unique knowledge, and then they say one thing and it makes you think about something different, and you're like, oh yeah, well, I never thought about it like that, or maybe I am a really good driver, or wow, I should try that. And then, you know, that's all it takes. So you got to keep brainstorming this game, right?
Yeah, well, the best advice I ever got from somebody, I used to tinker a lot, and it was always, hey, if the pros aren't doing it, neither should you, or if the pros haven't tried that equipment, neither should you, because those guys get paid to do it and they're only going to use the best of the best. And it also applies to, like, you know, the team they surround themselves with. Every pro has a team, right? They've got usually a mental coach. They've got a swing coach. You know, they probably have a putting coach, right? A lot of different coaches, a lot of team members around them. And I know for a lot of people, this game isn't, you know, that serious. I'm not saying you need to go like assemble this team, but like, find some buddies or find some people or podcasts or whatever. It's amazing how many DMs we get all the time. People just want to like talk about the game and pick your brain. It's like, find those 5-6 people that, you know, after a round, like those guys that you text or gals that you text, they're like, hey, I shot a whatever today. And their immediate response is like, dude, that's awesome. What went well? Like what, like, yeah, like walk me through it a little bit. Like you got to have those people in your corner. And I think that's important too. Probably for all things in life, but specifically for this game and this combo we're having as well. Like it matters and it helps. So
couldn't agree more, man. Well, thanks again for being on the show. It's been a ton of fun. I can't wait for our rematch in January.
Yeah, I'll see you in January, man. I'm excited. Maybe you'll get that those Venmo dollars back.
Fingers crossed. Well, I appreciate it again, man.
Looking forward to it.